Okay, Alexander, we need to discuss Brexit. It's been a long time since we've talked about Brexit, but it hasn't gone away. It's still, you know, there's still a Brexit looming over the UK and over the European Union. What is the latest news on Brexit? Are we on course? What's happening?
Yes, I think we are on course. And that's really very interesting because one of the most striking facts about Britain at the moment is that we've had lots of news. We've had the pandemic. We've had the economic crisis that goes with the pandemic. We've had all kinds of things going on around, you know, Britain and politics. And there's been a crisis brewing in Scotland and all this. But it's become absolutely clear that the big dividing line within the amongst the British people, the thing that they still care about most, the one that drives politics, is actually Brexit. And it explains an awful lot about our politics at the moment, which, you know, we'll talk about shortly in another video, perhaps. But the point is that it's absolutely clear to me that the Johnson government has no option but to press forward with Brexit by the end of the year, that it would be in very serious trouble if it didn't. And it's taken certain steps over the last couple of days to reassure its supporters that it is actually going to see Brexit through and Brexit done. And what they are saying is there will have to be either a no-deal Brexit entirely, which is what we're looking at increasingly. It's becoming very difficult to see any other possibility than a no-deal Brexit. Or they will go for the lightest possible type of Brexit, a kind of Brexit which will be some, you know, reductions in tariffs, but one which will not in any way restrict Britain's capacity to do trade deals. And that has to be sorted out before the end of the year. So they're actually giving Brussels now, you know, take it or leave it, making take it or leave it demands of Brussels, which is, I think, astonished the people in Brussels. There's been some talk of changing the EU's Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, because I think they've only now finally grasp the fact that this is actually going to happen in earnest. And of course, the government has now done an extraordinary thing, which is that it said that it will keep the United Kingdom united and that it's prepared to make regulations for Northern Ireland, which will change the terms of the withdrawal agreement. You remember that they did this withdrawal agreement last year. They will change the terms of the withdrawal agreement unilaterally, and that they're prepared to do that even if it breaks international law. Now, I think the reason they've done that again is in order to make it absolutely clear to Brussels that they are totally in earnest about this. So I think it's going to happen. What I would say is that on the other side, the anti-Brexit side, we've seen a major escalation in the media over the last couple of days and weeks, with more and more demands that there be an extension, that we can't we can't have this sorted out by the end of this year, as it's supposed to be. So they're demanding an extension. They demand that it negotiations go on beyond the end of the year, that the law in effect be changed, that they be prepared to do all of those things. In other words, kick the ball down the road indefinitely until we finally get supposedly the deal that is going to be optimal to us, which of course they see as a deal which basically keeps Britain in close economic harness with the EU. I'm going to say something else, which is one of the things that for me has completely undermined that argument, is that we've been hearing for years all this flesh creeping talk about what a disaster a no deal Brexit would be. And they came up with economic figures. These are the Remainers, which supposedly showed what a disaster it would be. And these suggested that GDP, that Britain might lose 8% of GDP, GDP growth, not an actual reduction, GDP growth, over 15 years. Well, that's not going to be noticeable. I mean, 8%, it's not going to be noticeable. And besides which, over 15 years, I mean, anything can happen in the world economy. There might be another financial crisis, or there might be, you know, the most extraordinary boom, or there might be any kind of thing. You cannot make those kind of predictions over 15 years. And I think they actually undermined their case by making that prediction. It was supposed to scare people. I think, on the contrary, it's probably told them, well, you know, this isn't really the great terrifying thing that it's supposed to be. So I think the government is signalling that it's going to see this thing through by the end of this year, because it understands that its politics, its survival now hinge on getting Brexit done before the end of the year. And I think that the Remainers, though they're making a big push to try and get an extension, undermined their own case by making this economic prediction. I mean, if they said, you know, that there would be a, you know, an 8% contraction within the first few months, that might have scared people. But over 15 years, say, you know, growth might be, you know, we might, you know, in 15 years time have a economy that's 8% smaller than it might otherwise have been. Well, that's not going to impress anybody.
Yeah, I think now with the lockdown, everything's out the window as far as projections. I mean,
what do they even mean? I mean, this is the other thing. I mean, the whole thing is just. I mean, I think this is. As I said, I think that we were, you know, being led to think for all those years. You remember about, you know, how food would run out and shops would close and lorries would pile up at the ports and all that kind of thing. Well, clearly that's not what's going to happen. An 8%, you know, your GDP might be, you know, 8% lower in 15 years' time than it might otherwise be. That's not what that says. And besides, over 15 years, how can you possibly know that? I mean, you know, we could have another pandemic, we could have another crisis, or we could have actually a massive economic boom. You know, there might be, you know, new technologies might all kick in, things might begin to take off. I mean, it's a meaningless prediction. It's not even a prediction. It's just a bit of future. It's futuristic
fear mongering
that you know carries no traction. So I think it's going to happen at the end of this year. In fact, I'm sure it will. And as I said, it is very, very interesting that the British public are basically entirely focused around it. That any idea that interest in this has dimmed, or that you know, support for it has wavered, is clearly not true.
Can you get into, you mentioned Scotland in the beginning, can you get into what's going on with Scotland? And can you also elaborate a little bit on a little bit more on Northern Ireland? Is there anything going on with the backstop or any of that stuff?
No. I mean, that's gone. I mean, this is the other thing. I mean, Johnson, if I should just deal with Northern Ireland first. I mean, Johnson last year, in order to get the withdrawal agreement through on his terms, made certain concessions to the EU on Northern Ireland, because they were saying, you know, that there's got to be Northern Ireland has to be kept within the EU single market. And he conceded that. And what he's now prepared to do, and he's saying it quite openly, is that he was forced to make that concession, and he's now going to go back on it. He's passed legislation in Britain which entitles him to do that. And he's prepared to do that, even though it breaks the terms of the withdrawal agreement and would be contrary to international law. The government's senior legal advisor at the Foreign Office has resigned over this. But, you know, the government shrugged their shoulders and will just plow on, it seems. So to me, I think that was intended as a clear signal to Brussels that Johnson is absolutely in earnest about this. So that was what that was all about. Now, I think there will be some people in Northern Ireland who will be unhappy with that, because there's strong pro-Remain sentiment in Northern Ireland. And I think some people in the Catholic nationalist community will be very unhappy if that threat, that implied threat within what Johnson says he would do, is actually implemented, because it might mean some kind of a harder border between the North and the South. But as a demonstration of seriousness to the people in Brussels, it's actually a very dramatic one. It's something which I am sure that none of them there expected. Now, Scotland is, what we have in Scotland is that there is the Scottish Nationalist Party has formed the government of Scotland. They've been talking for some time about holding a referendum in Scotland for Scottish independence. There is a election to the Scottish Parliament coming, pending, which the Scottish Nationalist Party, the SNP, is expected to win by a landslide. Scotland has a very strong pro-Remain majority. That's partly, I think, in order to on the part of Scottish voters, because it somehow differentiates Scotland from England. I don't think it's ever really been thought out in that way. But what is being said is that if Britain breaks away from the EU without a deal, pro-Remain Scotland might push even harder for independence, and that once the Scottish Parliament elections are out of the way, the SNP government in Scotland will then hold a referendum on independence. Now, the thing to understand about that, and it's beginning to look a bit like the Catalonia situation, is that that referendum on independence could only be held in Scotland legally if the government in London agrees. Boris Johnson has said that he will not agree. So that creates the prospect for a big political and constitutional clash between the government in Edinburgh in Scotland and the government in London. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but I will say this. If Scottish independence doesn't happen within the next year or two, then the prospects for it will begin to recede. And I will explain why. Briefly, Scotland and England are part of one economy. The Scots have developed this feeling that, you know, if they break away from England and reintegrate with the EU, which is not a straightforward process at all, by the way, then they can balance out any economic losses that they have coming from a divorce with England quite quickly. But if that divorce doesn't happen, then the fact is that Scotland remains economically tied to England, because England has so much the bigger economy. It accounts for something like 85% of the economy of Britain. It seems to me that in that kind of situation, Scottish voters will start to say to themselves, well, we have to have influence in London, because that's where the economic decisions that affect us are being made. So that will then cause, over time, sentiment in Scotland to shift against independence. So it either happens soon or it doesn't happen at all. In my opinion, the reason why nationalist sentiments in Scotland took off in the way they did was because Britain was within the EU, and that gave nationalists in Scotland the sense that they had an alternative in the EU. If that isn't there anymore, then they have to re-engage with England. And the way to do that is by voting MPs to the Parliament in Westminster. So you see the dynamic changes. So they have, I think, a window of perhaps a year, possibly 2 years, in which to do it. They can't do it within that time. The likelihood is that the whole nationalist tide in Scotland will begin to recede, and we will start to see Scotland reintegrating more closely with England again. And at that point, by the way, we might start to see the politics in Scotland changing. And unionist parties like Conservative and Labour starting to regain traction in Scotland, which they've lost. It's a rather complicated explanation, but I hope I've made it as clear as I can.
No, I mean, I think I get it. When the UK was going to stay inside the EU, Scotland breaking away, though it was a big decision, it still meant that Scotland would still have ties, not only obviously to the EU, but it would still be connected to England and the UK, because they're all part of the same
market. They would have all been part of the same single market, so goods could move backwards and forwards. It wouldn't have been a particularly big break.
Now things have changed.
Absolutely.
You break away from England, from the UK. You know, you're basically staring at the European Union being your trusted partner, no one else. I mean, want to trust the European Union in Brussels?
Well, indeed. Well, quite. I mean, given that I suspect pro-Remain sentiment in Scotland isn't very strong. But that's the first thing to say. I mean, but beyond that, I mean, you know, there are all kinds of problems integrating with the EU. But ultimately, your biggest economy and biggest partner is the one to the south of you, which is England. I mean, even when Scotland and England and Britain were part of the EU, the vast bulk of Scottish trade was not done with other EU countries. It was done with England. So I don't think this has been fully grasped in Scotland yet, but given time, I think it will be. And I think, you know, Scottish voters will say to themselves, increasingly, well, hold on, how can we run ourselves like this, you know, by ourselves, even if we manage to join the EU, when England is so economically dominant in our affairs, our own economic affairs? The only way to do that is to have representation in London.
Yeah. With the UK leaving, it changes everything as far
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, as I said, the window for independence is quite small. And I'm going to say something else. The other problem that there is for independence is that I get the very strong impression that the Scottish Nationalist Party, at least the leadership of the Scottish Nationalist Party, are really very keen on it. I think they're very happy with the situation they have at the moment, where, you know, they're in charge in Edinburgh. They get big payouts from London to help them run things. They're not apparently running things terribly well in Scotland. I mean, there's all kinds of problems building up in Scotland, which the SNP government hasn't been dealing with very well. But, you know, they're happy to keep things as they are, whereas an independent Scotland would be a, you know, leap into the dark, which I think some of them are not too keen on making. So that they talk about independence, I don't think they really want it. That's my own gut feeling about some of them.
It's not so much, you know, the leap in the dark is one thing, but you leap in the dark into the arms of Brussels, and there you kind of say, oh, crap.
And, of course, Brussels is not the great friend of small countries.
That's exactly right. You say, what am I doing? These are the guys I'm going to bet my future on.
Exactly.
An EU which is collapsing anyway.
Exactly. But notice also an EU that fosters separatist sentiments within its countries. I mean, you have them in Britain. You've seen it with Scotland. You've seen it in Spain with Catalonia. You see it in Italy with places like Lombardy and especially Venice. So whereas if countries, you know, start to reestablish themselves and become sovereign again, I expect those secessionist movements within those countries to start to ebb, because the economic logic then points to tying these nations back together.
Exactly. Good point. All right, Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below to make sure you get notifications every time we publish a video and when we go live. Also, drop us a comment as well. We really enjoy reading your comments. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and subscribe star. Your donation really helps out this small but growing channel and channels soon to be. You can look for my channel, Alex Cristoforu. It's in the description box. Please subscribe there. And Alexander will have a channel very, very soon. Keep an eye out for that, though we will announce it when the time comes. And also go to the Durant shop, pick up some merchandise. I've got a U.S. Magic mug, Alexander, and a Canada shirt.
Indeed. And I have a British mug with my British Yorkshire breakfast tea in it, which is exactly the kind of mug that you want to drink. The kind of mug that you want to use when you're drinking that kind of tea. And you can see there's the Union Jack. We also have, of course, enameled mugs. And this is England. So you can see there's the flag of England, because after all, I live in London and England is my home. So there's Britain and there's England. And I should say that I'm one of those people who very much wants to see the United Kingdom hold together, though I'm, you know, absolutely a peaceful man. If Scotland wants to go, well, there it will be. But those are my sentiments. So there's Britain and England, the best mugs in the world. The porcelain one, the magic mug, the amazing magic mug, the enameled mug, which is wonderful for taking outdoors, as I did when I was walking in the Peak District National Park with my wife and my dogs just a few weeks ago. So they're the perfect mugs for those things. And of course, you've got mugs with all sorts of other flags. There's also the United States. You can see it there. And there's Australia too. And we've also got smaller mugs. This one has Greece, which is, of course, the nation of my birth. So we have all of these wonderful mugs. We've also got amazing shirts, also with national flags on. And by the way, if you can't find your own flag either on our mugs or our shirts, wait a little, because our shop is expanding its lines. But, you know, drop us a line if you can't see it before very long, and we'll see what we can do. But we've got these amazing shirts. I think Alex has one of our new shirts with a flag on it on him. In fact, it's Canada, so there you go. And we've also got amazing hats. We've got trucker's cap hats and baseball caps and embroidered caps. And we've got also hats and caps coming with national flags on them. So keep an eye out for those too. And of course, you've got our ebooks. So you'll find all of these amazing and wonderful things in our shop. And as Alex says, by coming to our shop and buying these wonderful things, you support our small and growing channel and our new channels, which are also coming soon. So come to our shop, support the Durant, support our channels, plural, and buy yourself these wonderful things. Alex will quickly remind you how to do it.
You'll find the link to the Durant shop down below, thedurantshop.com. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.